to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
The show, it is Friday, Pow Hana Friday, Friday, end of the week. We're just getting ready to cruise into that weekend. It is also the first day of spring, and it certainly looks like it here. It's a gorgeous, beautiful day here on the island of Oahu. It's still a little cooler than we normally have this time of year, but, you know, for those people who are coming over to visit from the mainland, and it's still snow on the ground, they think we're very warm and balmy, and I had occasion to be down by the Aloha Tower earlier today on business, and I'm driving along Nimitz Highway, and right in front of me are a couple of very, very lovely young tourist ladies. And I know they're tourists because they're driving these little rental motor scooters that they rent to the tourists. And they're both in bikinis, which is not something you see the local women in at this particular time of the year. And how can I put this delicately? I think for the first time in the many, many years I've been here in Hawaii, I begin to appreciate those potholes in Nimitz Highway as those motor scooters were just jumping up and down and getting past those. But I digress. I hope it is a wonderful springtime where you are, and that the weather is finally starting to let up for those people who have really suffered a tremendous amount of inconvenience from that. Now, turning to more serious stuff and the news, as we always do, we're going to start off here with the economic news. The Dow started up a little bit today, then it really took a major drop. Then there was kind of sort of this push up at the end to try and hold the line, as it were, control the losses. It ended up down 122 points. And I think between yesterday and today, it's starting to look like that surge upward from a week ago has pretty much fizzled. It's the end of the trend, so to speak. May have been just a dead cat bounce. Who knows? May have been just not much point in trying to prop that up anymore, because stock market's about value, and the value isn't there until we start making products that other people want to buy. And I know I've hit that one over and over again, and, well, what can I tell you? Now, from California, we're getting this story. As you know, a few weeks ago, there was a big news story about tent cities springing up all across the country, and there was a particularly large one in California, and it got a lot of press. We are now hearing that the mayor of Sacramento is basically going to shut down the tent city because of the negative media attention it has brought as a symbol of U.S. economic decline. Now, they are promising and assuring that they're going to find some alternative shelters for these individuals to be living in. Well, if the shelters were available, they wouldn't have been in the tent city. So I'm cautious here. If they're really going to do something to help these people get back into some real residence, or are they just chasing them out of town as an embarrassment? We can't fix the economy, but we're going to make it look like the problem has gone away, so we don't have to look at it. Here in Hawaii, and I know after the big talk up I did at the opening of the show here, the tourism agency isn't going to last this very much. Love me for this next part. We do have a homeless problem here in Hawaii, and it's very easy because we're so remote from the mainland. It's easy to actually literally get trapped here. Because, you know, a lot of people come out here, they want to live in Hawaii, and they think Hawaii is what they see in the travelogues and National Geographic and Hawaii 5-0 and Baywatch Hawaii and all these other shows. And it is, don't get me wrong, it is a very beautiful place, and my wife and I are very happy here. But we are a very long ways away from just about anything else. People will come out here, they've got a little bit of money to live on, they can't find a job. They keep staying and staying and hoping things will get better, and all of a sudden they don't have enough money for the rent, and worse, they don't have enough money to get back to the mainland. And that is a big source of where we get some of our homeless problems. We have a situation where I was told by one of our local social service people that they have caught other cities on the mainland putting homeless on the plane with a one-way ticket to Hawaii. Just to get them out of there and send them to Hawaii and figure we'll take care of them, because we tend to be a more liberal state in the approach to such things. But we do have a homeless problem, and every once in a while when it becomes really obvious where the tourists can see it, they'll go in and they'll chase it away, and basically it gets pushed out over to what we call our leeward side, which is the West Coast, and it's an area where not so many tourists go, and it's mostly military transmitters and bomb storage facilities, and it's kind of it's the more third world part of Hawaii. It's definitely a part of Hawaii you're never going to see unless you're watching Dog the Bounty Hunter. They go over there quite a bit. But we do have this homeless problem, and they're camped out on the beaches. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize they're homeless. They just think, oh, they're camped out on the beaches. How wonderful. They're going back to the traditional lifestyle of their Hawaiian forebears. And, no, actually, they've lost their home, and they're living on the beaches permanently. And let's be honest. If you're going to be homeless someplace, Hawaii is a good place to do it because the weather is mild all year long, and there's a bunch of fish in the ocean that you can catch to eat. So I guess as places to be homeless go, Hawaii is definitely very, very good. But getting back to the situation, we're this mighty nation with resources and skills and talent and really good people. There really shouldn't be any homelessness anywhere. Certainly as long as we have any homelessness, our government has no right to be sending our tax money to other governments around the world. And you know the one I'm specifically talking about. Certainly we should not be spending half of every tax dollar on things that kill people while our own citizens are sleeping in alleys or sleeping on the beach or eating out of trash cans or, you know, wherever they're going to be getting their food. It is a national scandal. And as far as the mayor of Sacramento is concerned, merely shutting down the tent city, it isn't fixing the problem. It's a cosmetic move only, like powdering over a zit on your face if you wear powder. So the problem really isn't going to go away. They're just various local jurisdictions. They're just going to try and move it to put it someplace where they don't have to look at it, where they can sort of go home and pretend that it's really not such a big problem as it really is. Because it is going to get worse, and there's going to be a lot more tent cities. And I think the image of America before the world, here in the year 2009, is of a bunch of homeless people camped out in front of an empty foreclosed mansion. That is kind of the image that, for me, iconifies the current economic situation. And it really does show how completely out of whack our entire system of government and finance has become in this country. We're still seeing the we're still seeing the brouhaha over those AIG bonuses. It is becoming a big hot button issue to where even companies that are not taking taxpayer bailout money are starting to say maybe we should cool the bonus thing because it's such a negative public relations thing. And I've had to cancel all bonuses here at What Really Happened. You know, I had to inform my wife and business partner Claire this morning that she's not getting a bonus this year. She wasn't terribly surprised, I have to be honest about it. There wasn't a high expectation of bonuses here at What Really Happened. We're still waiting for something like salary to appear down the road, let alone bonuses. But I digress. Anyway, but again, as we've said before, this issue about the AIG bonuses, it's a distraction. Because we're being kept focused on that by the corporate media. We're not looking at where the billions and billions and billions of dollars went to these counterparties who still are not being named. And, of course, the other scandal that's surfacing now is how many of the politicians in Congress who passed this bailout bill for AIG that included huge bonuses for the executives, how many of those politicians were getting campaign money from AIG. Basically, it's a kickback is what it's turned into. AIG gives a bunch of money to our politicians, and the top two people on the list are President Barack Obama and Senator Chris Dodd. And John McCain got $60,000. Hillary got $35,000. And it just goes on and on and on. And they turn around and they say, oh, AIG's in trouble now, and you know we've got to give them $200 billion in taxpayer money, and we got to let them give their executive bonuses because they've had a really hard time of it all. Okay, we're going to stop here. When we come back, we've got a caller waiting on the line wanting to talk about the homeless situation, and we will definitely get into that. So if you want to join us on the air, 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Donovan's in the control room, twiddling the dials and answering the phones, and we will be right back after these words from our sponsors.
is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program. Call Mike now at 800-259-9231. 800-259-9231.
And remember, the more you call in, the less you have to listen to me talk. And oh my goodness, the phones are just lighting up like a Christmas tree. We're going to go to Mark in Texas. Aloha, Mark. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hi, Mike. Greetings from the Alex Jones hinterland in Texas.
Well, I don't mean to hinder you, but what's on your mind today?
Yeah, you know that mayor out in California about the homelessness situation?
Yes.
That's on purpose. Because, you see, when renters see their neighbors evicted, they willingly pay rent. And when mortgage payers see homes being foreclosed, they pay the mortgage because they do not want the same to happen to them. They pay property taxes for the same reason. Now, it is important to understand that mortgage payers are not homeowners, at least not yet. Okay? And
yes.
So you mustn't do too much to help the homeless people, because it has to be as awful as possible in order to make the renters and the mortgage payers continue to pay.
Well, I understand what you're saying, but, you know, there's another aspect to this, and we're actually
I'm not in agreement with what I just told you.
You think this is their thinking.
I think it's disgusting, but this is what's happening.
Okay, well, there's another aspect to this, and we're starting to see it. When especially renters start seeing more and more homeless people, and they realize there's a lot of empty properties sitting out there, then they realize that it might be time for them to move and find a better place for less money. And amazingly enough, here in Hawaii, it was a headline on the Star Bulletin just a week ago, rents here on Oahu are falling rapidly.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, and so that may be the reason that they want to get the homeless moved away. I know here in Hawaii it's an image problem. You know, we're this tourism mecca, and people don't want to come here on a vacation from all the problems they've left behind, only to be confronted with the problems that we are having right here. We're supposed to be this wonderful, idyllic, tropical paradise, and we are, but we are also an urban area, and we have the same problems as any other urban area, and we're part of the United States, and we're caught in the United States economy.
One of the upscale neighborhoods, one of the excerpts, near Austin, the property values, according to Zillow, are down by about a third.
That's about right, yeah.
Already. And
yes.
Other parts of Austin, I think they're down as well because nothing's selling. But the correction hasn't yet been made on Zillow. But that's the situation here in Austin. And in Austin, they've very much downplayed the impact. They're trying to make it look like things are a lot better in Austin than in other parts of the country, and that may be true to some extent, but I'm seeing an increase in the number of homeless here, too.
Yeah. You know, obviously the corporate media, they are here trying to propagandize that things aren't all that bad. There's no reason to be angry with the corporations, no reason to be angry with the government. It's all going to work out sooner or later. But, you know, we just got our local report here from the state capitol, and they're saying, we're going to be in a recession here in Hawaii for at least another 2 years, and that it will be 7 to 8 years before we've fully recovered from this incredible hit that we have taken. I mean, our tourism is down. Between TSA fondling everybody who comes through the airport and just the reputation of the United States, our image with the rest of the world, you know, we're the 21st century version of the Nazis in the eyes of much of the rest of the world.
If you don't find a place to live and you want to be homeless, Then we'll have you evicted from your patch of land there next to the city where you pitch your tent. And if you don't like that, well, you know, we can put you in a FEMA camp.
Well, I think the FEMA camps are more reserved for people who are more of an annoyance than merely being homeless. Anyway, Mark,
that will come. The homeless people will become a thorn.
I think they're there already. Mark, we got to let you go here because I've got another caller on the line I want to get to. So thank you very much for the phone call, Mark. We're going to switch over to Dave in Arizona. Aloha, Dave. What's on your mind today?
Yes, Michael, hi. I'm just wondering for the financial solution, what would happen if we just erased everyone's debt tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
And anybody that had bought a house and there was a mortgage on it, their debt is gone. They mm-hmm. own their house.
Mm-hmm.
And they still continue to work and earn money. And so it just gives everybody a chance to take a deep breath and have some wealth for a little bit. It would affect everyone on mm-hmm. down through the poorest. And the people that are rich that already have property, you know, it wouldn't hurt them that much if they had to relieve everyone.
Well, in their minds it would. In their minds it would, because they measure their wealth not in paper dollars, but in how many people are obligated to work for them functionally as indentured servants for the rest of their lives. Now, this idea is not new. In ancient times, in ancient Israel, there was this year of the Jubilee every 50 years.
Absolutely.
Where all debts were wiped out. It was an idea that was copied repeatedly by ancient Rome because they understood that the practice of lending money at interest was inherently destabilizing to a society.
Right.
And every once in a while, they would reach a point where people were so far in debt, they would just give up any hope of a better life and they'd quit working. And
right.
I think we're pretty much at that point right now. Now, we don't need to go to that extreme of simply wiping out all private debt. And, you know, I think that the private debt we agree to take on is something that we should pay off. But the debt we have no control over is, of course, that of the United States government. And, I mean, the way they're spending money. I mean, look at Octomom. Eight kids, they just were born, they're already $40,000 in debt each.
Well, we just have to put a stop to it. And we have to
We're going to have to do that.
Get rid of
we
the Federal Reserve banking system and give the bank over to the people or something.
Well, we need to go back to the system that we had when the country was founded, which is a currency
right.
based on a unit of value
exactly.
rather than something borrowed from a central bank that's simply printed up out of thin air. Yes. I mean, everybody knows the Federal Reserve was a scam, probably the biggest swindle played on the American people next to the 16th Amendment itself.
Well, it goes deep.
Yes. It absolutely does.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is, though, if we wanted to revive the economy, we could cut federal taxes in half. And the only thing we'd have to do to pay for all that is give up this psychotic need to go around the world killing brown people.
Oh,
and
my,
if we cut
oh,
federal
my.
Taxes in half,
oh,
then
my.
We could pay our mortgages. That ends the real estate crisis. We could pay our credit cards. That ends the credit crisis. We could go to the store and start buying flat panel TVs. That ends the retail crisis. We could get the economy going tomorrow if we just cut out all this war making.
I know.
You know.
I know. The sad thing about it, Michael, is I do happen to believe the teachings of Christ, and he said that there will never be peace, and when they do talk about peace, then you can be sure that sudden destruction will come. So,
yes.
Fortunately, we all have to work towards peace. You know,
yeah.
we all have to love our neighbor and work with each individual around us, but our government has to learn. I'm afraid they will never learn.
No, because there's too much money to be made.
I know.
I know. I mean, Eisenhower warned us. Eisenhower warned us.
I know.
That was the situation. And, you know, unfortunately, we listened. We didn't take heart. We're conditioned by television. And I work in the industry, and so I'm sort of biting the hand that feeds me. But we're conditioned by television to simply say, if we just sit on our rear end, a solution will offer itself in 30 or 60 minutes less time for commercials. Speaking of commercials, I got to let you go here, Dave. Thank you very much for the phone call. We're going to take a break here. We're going to play some of our commercials here, and then we're going to come back and try and find some more solutions for you to incorporate in your own life in dealing with this out-of-control government spending and debt. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network, home to hard-hitting talk radio.
You're listening to the Genesis Communications Network. And now, set your eyes on the future, and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're going to jump around a couple of other stories. Over in the Strait of Hormuz, they've had a little bit of a fender bender where a U.S. nuclear-powered submarine collided with one of the U.S. Amphibious assault ships that are patrolling around there. And I bring this up before, you know, minor injuries, minor damage, no radiation leak. They did lose about 25,000 gallons of diesel fuel that it is assumed will simply evaporate off into the atmosphere. So it's not that big a deal. But it does point out that there seems to be a problem with the U.S. Navy's ability to handle all of this taxpayer paid for hardware. We had the collision with the USS Greenville and a Japanese fishing trawler here off the island of Oahu some years back that killed a bunch of students. And of course, only a month ago, we had the USS Port Royal that grounded itself on a reef right off Honolulu Airport. Was there for 4 days, and they dumped 75,000 gallons of 7,500 gallons of raw sewage onto the reef before they were able to pull it off. And I understand submarines operate in a very, very difficult area, but it does seem that there are a lot of these collisions going on. I posted a link to an article relating to the theory that the Russian submarine Kursk was actually sunk by an accidental collision with an American submarine that was there spying on them. And I put that up there because there's this long list of collisions between U.S. submarines and other ships. 9 out of 10 times, they are never reported. I think the reason this one was reported is too many people were around. The Strait of Hormuz is a very, very narrow area. Too many people saw it, so they had to report it. Usually, they will not admit that these collisions have happened. We're going to go back to the phones. We've got Sean in Nebraska. Aloha, Sean. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
How you doing, Mike?
Doing just fine.
Yeah, I'm the guy out here in Nebraska that's got the Part 15 transmitter.
Oh, yeah, 1650 AM.
Yeah, I'm trying to do everything I can to educate people out here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also a registered Republican, and the only reason I registered was to participate in Ron Paul's run for the nomination.
Mm-hmm.
But I stuck around, and we had a luncheon with our congressman. Actually, it was breakfast, and I actually got to confront him about the Federal Reserve a little bit. I didn't do a very good job, but I think we'll do it again the next time he has one of these things. And mm-hmm. probably more than anything, educate the people that are there talking to him, because it's not getting covered at all. You're right. It's the biggest scam pulled on the American people since its inception in 1913.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the first time it was tried. There were two earlier attempts to set up a national bank that would loan fiat money to the government at interest, and both times those earlier banks were shut down by presidents who had the courage and wisdom and foresight to realize that these banks were serving themselves and not serving the national interest. And, they got the Federal Reserve Act run through Congress during a Christmas break. They got Woodrow Wilson to sign it into law. That was the deal they'd made with him to finance his run for the presidency. And after his term in office, he apologized to America, said, "I have destroyed my own country." And he's absolutely right, because the Federal Reserve system of money has bankrupted the ordinary working class American people while raising above us an elite class of, for all intents and purposes, nobility, especially since the original 13th Amendment regarding titles of nobility was made to disappear many, many years ago. But yeah, we have this permanently wealthy royal class living on top of our society, and we're struggling here underneath to pay all the bills that they keep creating to drop on us. And for all this talk about bailing out the economy and saving the economy, all they're doing is they're looting you and I and the guy next door and the teacher at the school. They're looting all of us. They're putting us into a permanent state of indentured servitude by taking and taking all this money and pouring it into AIG and Citigroup and all these other companies. We're being driven into tax debt faster than we can ever possibly pay it off.
Oh, it's scary.
Yeah, it is. Well, actually, scary shouldn't be scary. It should enrage you. It should piss you off. It should make you angry. Don't let it make you afraid. Afraid isn't going to get you anything. Angry will get you through. It is time to get angry.
I think there was a story I think I read on the site about the media, and I've said that for a long time, that our media is one of the biggest problems that we face, because everybody's, you know, I don't know what the percentage is. I think there's a lot of people waking up now, but I still think there's a major portion of our population that has no idea, no conception of the scams that are being pulled on us, and it seems like at a much higher rate now.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely accelerating because the greed is running rampant, and I think there's a feeling within the halls of power and the financial system that it's not going to hold together much longer. So, you know, everybody's out to line their own pockets as deep and as hard and as much as they can before it really starts coming apart. But as far as the percentage of people waking up versus the percentage of people still buying the media, there's a lot of denial out there. People don't want to deal with what is on the horizon here. And they're desperately clinging to any lie the government will hand them that lets them go to bed tonight thinking everything's going to be fine when I wake up in the morning. But we see every day another newspaper is closing, another TV news department is having to cut back and shrink down. I mean, it's actually affecting my day job, because a big part of what I do to actually make my living, because I'm not making any money doing this, but what I actually do to pay the bills is I produce and direct television commercials out here on the island of Oahu. And what we've been hearing for the last couple of, going back almost a year now, is all the local network affiliates are saying, we're being told we can only use our own internal resources, and we're not allowed to go outside anymore because we just don't have the budgets for it. I mean, we've had clients literally collapse out of business still owing us money. It's been a very, very rough year in that. So, but, you know, it basically is an indicator that the media is definitely falling on very hard times, and they've created the situation for themselves because nobody likes being lied to. And I know the media wants to blame the blogs, and they want to blame the alternative media, but really they created this mess because if they weren't lying to the public in the first place, who would have bothered setting up a blog? I wouldn't have. The only reason I started What Really Happened 16 years ago is I knew we were being lied to about Vincent Foster, the deputy White House counsel that they said was a suicide and it was obvious it was a murder. That's the only reason I started this whole thing and went down this path in life. It's not like I said, ooh, I think I'll start a blog just for the heck of it. Heck no, I was too busy chasing my brand new blushing bride around our condo. And so the whole blogosphere is a symptom, it is a reaction of the public at large to the growing awareness they're being lied to. And if, you know, if the media...
I think scared. I really do.
Yeah, I would agree. We're seeing every day, you know, they're trying to find ways to disarm the American people. They're trying to find ways to shut down the blogs and the alternative radio. I mean, they're at the point now where they're saying that anybody who expresses disagreement with the government is now to be classed as a potential terrorist. I mean, that's a fear reaction right there. I mean, the whole point of the...
One of the other things they're really good at is divide and conquer. Mm-hmm. You know, anymore, if I get into a political conversation with anybody, I say, look, I don't believe either side merits anything because nothing ever gets done. I mean, they just talk and talk and talk well, and everything turns out to be lies.
Well, if you're talking about the Republicans versus the Democrats, I would agree with you on that. But as far as nothing ever getting done, remember, that was Ceausescu's big mistake, was thinking that the Romanians would never actually do anything with all their complaints. It was also Charles I's big mistake. It was also Louis XVI's big mistake. It was Mussolini's big mistake. I'm sure you can see where we're going. Thank you for the call. We've got to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back. It's the last segment of our show today. And a couple of things here in the news. First of all, getting back to Swindler's List, Bernie Madoff has been denied bail. Apparently, the suggestion that they might even consider allowing him out between now and his sentencing hearing provoked a tremendous backlash of outrage. I mean, in theory, Bernie is going to jail for the rest of his life. He might as well get used to it now. is the bottom line here. Yes, he's a flight risk. Yes, he's got money secreted away. He's automatically entitled to citizenship in Israel if he can get there. Of course he's a flight risk. There's no reason to leave him out of jail on bail while he's waiting for his sentencing hearing. Because, you know, all it's going to do is make it that much harder for him when he has to go back in after he's given his sentence. So I'm glad to see that sanity prevailed here. When they started talking about delaying, I really thought they were going to try and find some way for him to get out. Of course, he could get really, really depressed, or he could suffer a sudden heart attack, and I'll retire to wherever Ken Lay is hanging out after his sudden, mysterious, strange, unpredictable demise that removed him from his legal troubles. So anyway, now George Galloway, of course, we all admire him for the courage he had standing up to the U.S. Congress and just putting them in their place. He just backed him right into a corner over the whole situation of the lies that were sold to the American people to trick us into a war in Iraq. So now apparently Canada is barring George Galloway from entering the country because he is a security risk. Apparently, his views on Afghanistan and the presence of Canadian troops there have irked some individuals in the Canadian government. And I have to tell you that this strikes me as very bizarre. I mean, they had no problem allowing George Bush to come in. And George Bush is the guy who started the wars that are killing Canadians. And they let him in. But George Galloway, who says, you know, that war might have been wrong to get into, and maybe we should start thinking about maybe not letting our Canadian kids get killed in it anymore, he is banned. And I want to tell you, I used to have a very high opinion of Canada because I'd been up there a couple of times on business, and the people are wonderful, and they are polite. I was up there doing a public speaking thing in Quebec. Literally weeks after 9/11, I was the only American who hadn't canceled showing up at this multimedia convention. And they were so polite, and they're wonderful people. But I got to tell you, my respect for the Canadian government has just cratered when they will allow George Bush to come in and talk and meet and do all that kind of stuff, and then George Galloway is banned at the border. Well, I'm sorry. I'm absolutely, absolutely appalled that the Canadian government has such a hypocritical set of double standards at the border there. All right, the other big story from this last week, and this is getting a lot of play all around the world. It's getting a little play in the United States. It's not headline news yet, but some of the newspapers are picking it up. The LA Times picked it up. I think maybe they're learning their lesson. Once it's out on the Internet, they can't hide it. They might as well go ahead and report it. And it may be too little too late because the LA Times is in serious financial trouble too. But you know, at least a shout out that they did report it. Some of the Israeli soldiers who were part of the Gaza operation have gone public that, yes, indeed, war crimes were committed by the Israeli troops in Gaza during this winter offensive. That, yes, they were intentionally shooting non-combatants. They were intentionally targeting homes and buildings they knew had nothing to do with Hamas. They were intentionally destroying locations that they knew there were no enemy troops there at all. We have been telling you this all along, despite the very best efforts of Israel to control all communication in and out of Gaza. Videotapes and stories were getting out, got onto the World Wide Web, and everybody saw what Israel was doing there in Gaza. So these soldiers have gone public and said, yeah, we really were doing these things. Now, Israel, of course, is doing some face-saving here because Israel has been denying and denying there were no war crimes, there were no war crimes, and they're losing the war of legitimacy because everybody knows they're lying. And sympathy was coming behind the Palestinians, and Israel is just, you know, the world at large is basically saying, okay, Israel's lying again. We know they're lying, and that's it. So now the latest tactic is Israel is functionally admitting that these war crimes took place. And they're going to investigate, and they're going to get to the bottom of it, which is a signal that Israel is going to claim that the war crimes were not official policy, and they're going to dump the blame on the Israeli kids in the uniforms. And that's what they're going to do. It's like when Abu Ghraib first came out. Oh, no, no, torture isn't a policy of the United States. It's just some of those soldiers who got carried away on the bottom level. And they slapped around some of those privates and corporals down there in the prison who were doing some of the abuses and just acted like it was not U.S. policy. We know now, in point of fact, that it was. That the decision to engage in such practices went all the way to the White House. They had legal memos drafted to justify it. We know that before the invasion of Iraq, the U.S. had gone around to all these other countries and tried to get them to sign treaties that the U.S. was to be immune from any actions at the World Court or the International Criminal Court, that we could not have our leaders and our soldiers dragged into The Hague to prosecute for war crimes. And at the time they were doing that, I pointed out on my website, I said, if the U.S. government feels it's necessary to go out and seek immunity from war crimes prosecution, it's because they are planning to commit war crimes somewhere in the future. And sure enough, it did so come to pass. So Israel is probably going to try and pull the same stunt. They're going to say it's a bunch of their soldiers just got out of hand and, you know, their boys will be boys and girls will be girls. And it wasn't official Israeli policy. Well, I'm going to call bovine excrement on that one, or bull biscuits, that we sometimes use that phrase around here, to stay within the limits of the FCC. And the reason that we know it's bull biscuits is because one of the war crimes they committed was using white phosphorus on civilian areas, on schools, on UN buildings. We have it on videotape and digital camera image. We know they did it. Obviously, Israel had to make the conscious decision to provide those weapons to the forces in Gaza. Where did they get those weapons? From the United States. The remains of these white phosphorus shells bear markings which confirm we, the people of the United States of America, were forced to pay for the war crimes that Israel committed against the people of Gaza. That's how messed up this thing is. Now, as I said, some American media has decided to go with this story and confront this issue of possible war crimes. Again, this is big news around the rest of the world. Not because it's news, because everybody sort of knew it was going along all along, but because now we have confirmation from within Israel's military itself. Now, what's going to happen with it? I don't know. I would hope, and this is where you all get to help me, I would hope that you will call your Congress critters and you will say that I don't want to pay for white phosphorus to drop on Palestinian schoolchildren anymore. I refuse to pay for bullets and bombs and cluster bombs to be dropped on Lebanon. I refuse to pay it. I won't pay it. And furthermore, we have to hold, you know, we need to enforce the Symington Amendment to the 1961 Foreign Appropriations Bill. That's the amendment that says it is illegal for the United States to be giving foreign aid to any nation that has nuclear weapons that has not signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and does not allow inspections. We know from this year's Joint Services Military Report, came out a couple of weeks ago, in this official United States government report, Israel is listed as a nuclear power. So the U.S. government knows Israel has nuclear weapons. They are continuing to send them your tax money in violation of U.S. law, and it is time to hold Congress to account on that. We need that money. We need that money to rebuild our homes and businesses and schools and factories and our hospitals. Why are we sending it to a foreign government to commit war crimes with? Anyway, that's it for our Friday show. Have a nice evening. Have a nice weekend. We'll be back here tomorrow on GCN at 11 a.m. Central Time. Until then, stay safe, be well, hug your loved ones, drive carefully, and aloha, America.
No. to hear the shows in your area, simply call your local radio stations and tell them about your favorite GCN programs. It's easy. Log on to GCNlive.com or call us toll-free, 877-807-4048. Make a difference. Call your local stations and contact us through affiliate relations at GCNlive.com or call 877-807-4048. Call today.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit and carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.